Hi, this is Ella.
Hi, Ella. Welcome.
Thank you.
We get started in just a few minutes.
Sure, as always. People start coming to the meeting only a few minutes after meeting starts.
Yes, I think this is particularly tough because the modeling call is right before.
Oh, I see.
Hey, this is Alex, AT&T.
Hi, Alex. Welcome.
Thanks.
We are at the top of the hour, but I see people are still joining, so we'll give everybody a few minutes before we get started.
Hello.
Hi, Alex.
Hey.
Alex, are you still good to present today?
Sure.
Great.
We can get started at least.
Yeah. Great. Let's see, the joins are starting to slow. Do you want to go first? You can do yours and then I'll do the MEP one.
Okay. We can do that. Let me just make sure I've got everything. Yes. So, yeah, let me, do I have control?
Yes. Feel free to share your screen.
Oh, hang on. I may be hit by a problem here again.
Okay.
Just a second. Mm-hmm. Okay. First order of business, save the presentation. Okay. Okay, share screen. Can everyone see?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I tried to stay away from any specific terminology specific to any one given standard or anything, and really just kind of focus on the information model itself with respect to ONAP. And again, this is just food for thought, so don't expect this to be complete, perfect, shoot it full of holes by all means. But I just thought that maybe we can take stock in terms of what we need to manage from an information perspective in ONAP over a period of time, and what does it mean in terms of layering, and also trying to take a Gill's diagram and I don't know how many of you were in the modeling working group meeting, but also try to dovetail into some of the discussion that Kevin was having there, and kind of see how it all comes together. So I'd like to start by talking about the personas, because to me, the way we need to kind of look at ONAP is, first and foremost as a black box with a bunch of people trying to use it from the outside looking in. And whatever the information model we present, first and foremost, has to facilitate that kind of interaction. There are probably other things we need to do internally between, in order to communicate between components. But if we look at ONAP as a platform, there are things we need to be able to do with it. And so what I'm suggesting is that we have three kinds of personas, or three kinds of families of personas, I would say. Those that use ONAP, and those would be customers or end users who actually consume the services that have been instantiated for them. Those that want to do some level of self-service management on instances that belong to them. These could be people with different kinds of capabilities, administrators, operators, etc. Then there are those that manage ONAP, and again, I break things down in terms of those that define how things need to be done and those that simply enforce the processes and rules on behalf based on the definition. And then there are developers, those that develop VNFs and those that develop network services and perhaps even VNFs inside the service provider organization.
So Alex, would these personas really equate to actors in a use case sense?
Yeah, they could be, right? So actors, personas are always people, and the way you do persona-based use cases is typically based on business outcomes. you define personas in a very specific way in terms of skill levels and what they do day to day and what they desire to accomplish. Actors can also be, you know, machine entities. It could be a module within a system. So this is, we can do the mapping between them, but, you know, let's be careful, because I think what we need to do is kind of drive the information model and the resulting interfaces based on tasks that different people want to do with the same approach.
I was just going to ask
a small comment here. The first light, those who use ONAP, we can get also application on top of ONAP, the one who requests network service.
Right, so that's what I meant to say, right? So I'm a customer, I go to ONAP, we have desire to make ONAP self-service, so I go to a catalog, I pick what I want, it is instantiated on my behalf by the automation, and then what I want to be able to do is consume it, right? But in a lot of cases, I may also want to manage it, right? Be able to see what the status is, you know, be able to do things with it, some rudimentary things, right? But still want to be able to do that. So you're right. It's really using applications on top of ONAP, not ONAP itself. So you know, in my mind, ONAP is basically a service delivery platform, right? Based on a cloud pattern, and so it's you know, we're delivering network as a service.
And so, the other thing you might look at. It's in that second category. I think service designers, I mean, I don't know if that falls under the administrators, maybe it does, but I think there's a lot of possible different personas.
Yes.
That type of ONAP user.
Yeah, and I lump those in the developers part, right? Because you're right, they're service designers, but in essence, what they do is develop services. And so when I talk about the service provider DevOps environments, I kind of lump those in there. Again, these are just starting points for discussion. We can, we probably, you know, if we choose to follow through on this kind of approach, we can certainly, you know, iterate on it and be more precise. But you're right, they're service designers, and there will also be VNF service designers from a supplier perspective, right?
Oh, yeah, I misread the last.
There'll also be people who are going to be managing them, not just delivering them or designing them. So there's a whole slew of types and subtypes of users.
Yes, you're right. So again, I don't disagree. I think you're right. I think the granularity can be very fine-grained. I think we just need to, you know, for the sake of this discussion, I felt like simply grouping them into large lumps would be okay. But you're right. I mean, for you know, if we iterate on this, I would expect, you know, more fine-grained personas to show up. And some of them will be very much specific to individual opcos, right? Individual service providers. Because everybody does things a little bit differently. And their business processes will drive, you know, the definition of who the personas are. But in general, this is kind of it. Okay?
And then, so this, Alex, sits perfectly with the discussion on the last call of,
I know,
say that persona is the same as party role.
Yes.
And you can have an infinite number of them, and what are you going to do to manage it?
So you're perfect with your comments, right? So here's the information we need to manage. In my mind, this is probably just a subset, but this is what I could come up with on short notice and being jet lagged. So if I look at things, you know, I kind of divided them up into two parts, right? They're sort of managed objects, or I call them entities and groupings, that we have to manage inside ONAP. And then there are associations and mappings between them. And what I did is I just kind of outlined just a few kind of critical ones. You know, in the previous meeting, we kind of had this interesting discussion that we should only focus on service definitions of services and resources. I think we need to look at things holistically, at least at the high level first, and then zero in on a few things. But But I think it's important to identify the relationships between all these different entities and how they need to be managed together from a persona perspective, right? You know, when I come to a, you know, if I'm an administrator and I go to ONAP and I launch the portal, I got to be able to manage some of these things, right? Can I today? You know, can I make relationships between them? Can I create constraints, policies? All these things need to be kind of thought through. So users and tenants, right? We've been talking about multi-tenancy, but you know, that brings in a lot of complexity when you know, from a management perspective, is RBAC or role-based access control, their policies, rules, quotas, constraints, things of that nature. I can go through the entire list, but what I'm getting at here is that there's a fair amount of stuff that we need to be able to manage inside ONAP. And then from a mappings perspective, as soon as you introduce multi-tenancy and some level of security or entitlements, you now have to kind of deal with the fact that not all the resources are going to be consumable by all the customers. Some customers will pay more, some will pay less. There may be notions of service plans or other things in play that we need to think about. And so we need to be able to deal with these mappings and associations as well. Now, from an information model perspective, making things flexible is pretty important, right? So I was asking in the previous call, you know, how flexible is the SID model that's been defined? You know, can we remove associations or deprecate them? Can we add new ones without disturbing the old ones? From a data modeling perspective, this is even more important. And so this is where I propose we start with.
Alex, a quick question here. So perhaps it's maybe good to separate out the managed entities versus mappings, right? You know, so.
Well, the information model is typically about information elements and relationships between them, right? So they are separate. They are separate, but they manifest themselves in terms of management functions.
No, I agree. The only thing is probably, so what happens is the same thing gets repeated in both cases. It's a little maybe confusing if you look at it, right? Yeah, I agree. I mean, there is a mapping you need to explain, but so for example, mapping, maybe we can even be more explicit about specifically what is being mapped to what versus what is being managed. That's what I was trying to say.
So the mappings actually, to Andy's point, you know, the mappings actually would be more in line with the user stories and the use cases. So for example, if I'm managing users and roles, you know, as a administrator, I may need to be able to assign roles to multiple users. I may need to define roles. These are all user stories that we need to deal with. If I'm a tenant, you know, I may not have access to all the products in the catalog, but only a portion of them. And that's going to be based on entitlement. And so, you know, if I have, you know, resources, you know, what kind of providers are able to provide a particular kind of resource? How do I register them? How do I expose the capabilities? Just giving you some examples. You're right. These need to be elaborated on if we choose to continue. I didn't want to make any assumptions about, you know, where we want to take this next. But the other thing I wanted to talk about is the typical abstraction layers in the cloud that kind of happen. And I put down, you know, service/resource because to me, you know, it just depends on which way you look at things, you know, and that kind of makes a difference between a service and a resource. If I look up, I'm providing a resource to somebody. If I'm looking down, somebody's providing resources to me, but I'm consuming them as a service. And so one important thing to notice here is that there are two parts, right? You may own a bunch of resources, and you need to be able to manage them and kind of compose them into more and more complex environments. You can also procure something as a service, right? So, for example, if we start looking at what does it mean to run ONAP services on top of Amazon, right? Amazon provides a lot of the constructs that you would otherwise have to compose yourself and orchestrate yourself. And so what that also means is that there's got to be a clear kind of really well-defined delineation between a service view and the resource view, and that we need to be able to operate with minimal knowledge of what the infrastructure actually looks like. So these are just, you know, your typical kind of environments. And in ONAP, we actually can map our layers into this diagram if we really wanted to. So when I started thinking about the layers, then I kind of thought to myself, well, you know, we really have layers, and then we have kind of cross-cutting information models. And so really, they're just domains. They're different areas of concern and responsibility that we need to be able to deal with, right? So if you look at this diagram, you know, there's real infrastructure on the bottom, right? And so I'm talking about resources that are owned, physical resources, virtual cloud, you know, things that exist on-premise or might exist somewhere else. You know, we treat them as an abstraction already, right? We have this thing called a Vim. And so the Vim abstracts away a lot of the difficulties, a lot of the complexity of what it means to manage that real infrastructure. But there's still a lot of stuff to do. And so we need to be able to, you know, there's a notion of providers that we've apparently invented, need to be able to register them, manage them, discover what, you know, the infrastructure looks like, you know, behind each Vim, you know, monitor that infrastructure somehow, do some capacity optimization, you know, based on that, maybe even integrate with asset management and procurement processes so you can automatically order more stuff if you need to. And then above that is sort of the logical infrastructure that we ride on. And that's kind of where the optimization occurs, right? You know, when somebody specifies what a VNF or a service of any kind looks like, it's really done in terms of requirement, right? And the expectation is that those requirements are specified against a logical kind of view of the world. And then at instantiation time, there's a laid binding between the actual resources we have and the logical requirements that have been specified. And so that layer is kind of presents its own set of constructs that need to be managed. Then above that, we have the software, the services, and the applications. And by the way, the services and the apps and the logical infrastructure, that's something that you would, for example, find also as part of the Kafka specification. And so then above that, there are products or customer-facing services. There's a service access layer where you kind of deal with identity management and the RBAC and entitlements and, you know, some of the other things related to tenants and parties and whatnot. And then there's some cross-cutting things like governance and process, right? There's a place in the system where we actually make policies, make rules, make constraints, define them, design services, define, you know, different SLAs and whatnot. And then those get enforced by the modules or the functional layers on the right. But what I'm getting at is that each one of these layers kind of has its own domain model that it needs to deal with and partially perhaps expose to everybody else. And that partial sort of interaction or that interaction between the layers happens through the bus in the integration backplane. I think the Mal wrote this list of qualities that ONAP should have. One of them was that it had to be integration ready or integration centric. And today it's not. And so one of the things we may want to look at is what does it mean to do model-driven integration in the context of ONAP? And I think in the previous meeting there was even discussion around that where we said, well, can't change the world in one day, so you're going to have stuff that can't change or won't change. How do you integrate all that in? How do you make sure that you still move forward? So these are the information domains. Any questions on this?
Yeah, I think, Alex, I have a question about the product domain. And I'm really thinking that product domain is really a service domain. It's not really a product domain.
Maybe.
And use the term customer-facing service. And I think if we look at what Kevin presented previously, I think products would map well into services, and then the service application would map well into the service component perspective.
That's fine.
That's something we could talk about, because products usually have a contractual,
This is where, Chris showed me a couple of slides a few days ago and started looking at those, and they started trying to figure out how do we map things in, and it got kind of crazy, right? And then I got jet lagged. So yeah, by all means, like I said, this may not be perfect, but
it's a good start. It's a good start.
Yeah, and Alex, I'll be showing those slides later in the call. So
okay, so you'll bend my mind one more time. That's fine.
Yes.
I don't even know what city I'm in at this point. So let's see. So then I kind of started thinking about Gill's diagram, right? And the kinds of functional domains or functional groupings that we would need and capabilities that those functional domains would need to expose in terms of how they manipulate the managed objects and what they need to do. So I started thinking, well, there's maybe a way of kind of starting to take the existing components we have in the diagram that Gill had and kind of try to map it all together, right? And I didn't get all the way to the end of this, I apologize, but this was my starting point, that kind of mapping ONAP components into these functional areas or these functional domains. And if you look at it, this is actually inspired by something that you guys are gonna laugh, that Gartner and HP cooked up in 2012. And kind of still holds, in my opinion. And a lot of products have been built based on this kind of functional domain model. And may or may not apply to us, but, if I look at ONAP, it smells a lot like these layers, at least in my opinion. So, on the bottom, you've got infrastructure, supply, and demand layer, right? That's our multi-vim infrastructure, right? But the whole point there is to just keep the coal and, enough coal in the hopper to keep the boiler running, right? And make resources available for instantiation, based on service definitions. And then above that, there's the lifecycle management function that does the orchestration, the optimization, and they do ops. And we can take things like, the portions of the SO, portions of AppC, and, DCAE, and some other components, and kind of map them into these layers. Some of them will be cross-cutting, and that's cool. Others are going to be very specific to each layer. And so I make a distinction, much like the other presentations, between managing a service lifecycle and managing a resource lifecycle. These could be the same set of functions, but applied differently depending on the view. And then the part on top, the service management, your classic sort of, service levels and whatnot.
Alex, one thing you're missing in this picture is on the previous slide five, you had service and applications. I don't see applications here. The resources.
Yeah, this is the service LCM. There's no difference in my mind between the two. Everything is a service, and if you start.
Yeah, an application service by itself, and that's the point I think Gil was trying to make. That a single application, which we call VNF or resource in ONAP terminology, could itself a service.
Yes.
We are using here in the green box is more infrastructure like resource coming from infrastructure provider like multi-vim.
Well, so one thing I didn't get to was there's this notion of factories that I think would be useful for us to explore, right? So, when you're building something complicated like a use case instantiation, in my mind it's like building an airplane, right? You have a bunch of suppliers who build up parts, from small parts they build larger parts, and then there's final assembly. And in a lot of ways, you know, if we look at Tosca, it facilitates that kind of ability to build things iteratively from smaller parts and kind of build them up and up and up until you get the whole thing. And so for me, you know, when we talk about resources, you know, we're talking first and foremost about, you know, some set of providers that know how to manufacture them, right? And based on requirements, you know, they may be one or more, or there could be, you know, just one. It really just depends on what is it that I want to make, right? And how you manage the life cycle of those and how you recycle them, how you deal with them will be a little bit different than when you look at things from a service perspective, right? Different points of view, I guess, is all I'm trying to say here.
And of course, with a functional view like this, there should be some strong alignment to the information model view, at least on functions that are data-centric as opposed to task-centric.
Yeah, why is it so much easier to talk about this stuff in this group than in the previous one?
That's right.
What I want to know.
And of course, as you know, the TMF-TEM has a functional model, but they don't. Mm-hmm. They only cover BSS and OSS. The network side is missing.
Yeah.
And this also ties pretty well with MEF-LSL. You know, these layers are pretty similar to MEF-LSL.
This is common sense, right? You know, like I said, you know, a bunch of analysts came up with this, right?
I think there's a lot of things we can leverage from you know, both TM Forum as well as, you know, MEF in these areas.
I think so. And we can also use the best of breed approach, because if we partition the information model into these domains, then, you know, we could explore, you know, specific standards or specific de facto standards for doing things within each partition. What's important is that you still have a unified view, and this is what I call shared state on the bottom, right? So, well, I don't believe that without the shared state, you know, we can build anything that's integratable, right? And what I mean by that is that if I instantiate a VM, there's some notion of, you know, what that VM identifier is inside OpenStack. There's a completely different way of referring to that same VM elsewhere. Let's say if you're doing monitoring, you know, from a trouble ticketing perspective, there could be a completely different way of referring to things. And also, there may be inconsistency in terms of how you define that information object, or that the information element. And so, to me, we don't need to align all the different models. We just need to export the information within them into a meta model, I guess, or an integration model that allows us to integrate things without changing specific components. This is a business object integration pattern that's been used, you know, forever.
So just to, Alex, just to clarify the term shared state, are you saying really like a shared database across all these layers?
Imagine a data store, right, that has some set of business objects or integration objects that allow us to integrate, plug things together into the bus, right? It might be have variable degree of consistency. It may be decentralized and distributed across multiple locations. We may have policies that say which parts of this data store need to be strongly consistent, versus eventually consistent. But this kind of stuff, you know, if you look at some of the cloud native patterns for how stuff gets put together, this is kind of a normal piece, right? You can gossip state across, you can replicate it, you can do all sorts of things as needed, right? But I think it's required.
So Alex, this is also. We don't really have a layer architecture, right, from a functional point of view, because every layer could talk to any other layer.
That's the problem.
That's what we're starting to talk through. Do we want to get to a layered architecture moving forward?
I don't think it's necessarily layered. I noticed that the bus is kind of sideways here. What I'm suggesting is that it's a flat architecture.
Right.
What I'm suggesting is that any component only talks to the bus, not point to point to other components.
Exactly. So my question is, what do you think, because that's a great way of scaling, right? You don't, you only know to talk to one entity, right?
Yes.
And the entity probably handles the contracts, discovery of services, coordination. If I'm writing an application, I think that's great. I don't think our services and projects have been conceived around those lines. So the question is, what are the challenges and how do you see moving from one point to another?
So I've actually experimented with this pattern in practice, right? And so so the challenge is to define, is to classify the functional components, right? And to say what, you know, is to really have well-defined interfaces that they're implemented against, or there's a shim that's implemented against the well-defined interfaces in Southbound. It's whatever the native stuff is. That's the challenge, is to have a well-defined sort of articulation of what a factory is, of what a controller is, of what a sensor is, of what a helper function is, or an advisory function looks like. If you can define those interfaces, then you essentially have created an abstraction layer that you can have multiple implementations of. In fact, you can have a brokering scheme where you can choose the right implementation based on a particular situation, right? So you can make decisions on a more distributed basis. It works out. The difficult part, obviously, is kind of making sure that you've thought through the actual data model representation of the information model. And not today, but maybe later, I can share with you guys some of the stuff that I've done before in other lives. But yeah, it's all about defining the model and the interfaces based on it. You can do that well. This works.
Also, another important piece to consider for scale is, aggregate information models. If you look at today, right? I mean, basically, yes. Talking about, for example, infrastructure, right? We're dealing with hosts, VMs, right? But we really need to start up-level us and start thinking about, hey, multi-cloud instance, yes. Or, clusters with an instance, as an example.
So this is
when it comes to VNS, we need to talk about aggregates, right? When you're trying to do complex scheduling placement, right?
So I agree with you, right? And I thought I had a slide that kind of showed little shims in between here that said, this is what the abstraction layers look like. Maybe this slide is the best, right? I can have different kinds of compute resources, but there's got to be some abstract way to refer to them and also be able to deal with the differences. You can't do the least common denominator. That's impossible. But there's got to be some way of achieving some normalcy.
No, I absolutely, Alex. What I thought was, like, if you put the word aggregate, right, it sort of sticks to people's mind, right? Abstraction. Maybe I'm just being more explicit about it. That's all.
Yeah. So let's go on. I have two more slides, and then hopefully that'll leave enough time for the other presentation. So. If you look at interfaces, to me, the interfaces are model-driven as well, right? If we define a set of managed entities, we've essentially defined nouns. If we look at the personas and identify what they do in terms of tasks, we would have essentially defined a set of verbs that apply to a particular, to the nouns, right, to the objects that need to be managed. And so then you decide, how much of that whole namespace is relevant to everybody, versus just, private to a particular module. But what's also important here is that, a portion of that model is going to be exposed outside, right? Through the API gateway, and I'm assuming, we're going to end up with an API gateway the way we're going. I don't think we already have one, I believe, if we've used the MSB the way it was meant to be used. But the point also is that internally, the ONAP components don't have to communicate using the same external APIs that are exposed outside the box, right? They could be completely different. They could be internal models that drive those interfaces as well. So this is kind of, if you look at it in terms of model organization, I could have components, I could have my own private, domain-specific models here. But then, you know, I also expose that information into the external models that are both service-centric and resource-centric. Okay?
So in that context, the previous reference to domain model in, for instance, slide 6, is that a shared domain model? You know, domain model in each layer, is that shared across the whole?
So my expectation, and this is kind of, so, you know, if you start doing so if you look at the three personas on top, and you look at what it means for them to request a service, consume a service, or manage a service, what you'll end up with is a whole bunch of functional components or functions that need to be defined within each layer, right? In essence, you know, you're creating, you know, kind of like an entity relationship diagram or a swim lane diagram of what needs to happen, right? Each one of those corresponds to a management task or a consumption task. So within each rectangle, there is its own kind of, there are multiple components in play, but they have their own domain model that they share against, right? And then, you know, what gets shared, you know, from an external perspective is a much higher order view of the world than you may want to create within a particular layer. So it's shared within, but then, you know, what you expose out is just filtered depending on, you know, what view of the world we want to build.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
So by the way, these last two slides, you know, I are kind of closely spent time at some point with the Netflix guys and looked a lot at what they were doing. And then I found out that there was another person wrote up this paper for what he called a software-defined architecture. And it was all about how you build, you know, system like this based on models and APIs, and this diagram is an interpretation of what he had inside that paper. But again, you know, the
Alex,
assumption is yes.
This is Raghu. Is the implication that this is in the context of a single ONAP instance, or if I were to extrapolate this to either a multiple ONAP instance or a single ONAP instance where these component models are sort of distributed into, let's assume hypothetically the bottom green clouds are like different geographical domains or some domains, and therefore,
sure.
Right?
Sure.
So it could be logically separated pieces of the puzzle, but interconnected together via that MSB, in a sense, if you will, right?
So there's an assumption here that there's a single MSB that traverses a single administrative domain end to end, right?
And so the
key here is to make things very decentralized and very distributed. And so the bus is the logical connection, right? Where the actual components live, well, they could live far apart or close together. It doesn't really matter. If the components themselves are microservice based, then, you know, they might have a data layer which is, you know, which contains a lot of the state, and they themselves could be stateless.
If you were to go to slide 6, I'm getting an echo. If you go to slide 6, that same view could be thought of as the service management block, if you will, might be, could be centralized, whereas the resource blocks might be more distributed depending on the domain.
You're exactly right. So typically, okay. You know, there's a distinction between, you know, like in the governance use case, right? Or in for example, there's things that are typically centrally defined and enforced in a distributed manner, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. So that's kind of the implication, right?
Good.
So what I've tried to do is kind of say, look, I don't think we're far from this, to be honest. I think we just need to be very disciplined about the information model definition and then, you know, the APIs that we define based on it. There's some things we need to do, but this could actually be a fairly viable way forward for it.
Yeah, I think I agree, Alex. We're pretty close. The discipline is what is the issue, I think.
Yeah, I think if you go to slide five, I think slide five basically clarifies the terms pretty nicely and aligns nicely with ONAP terminology. We do have some concept of product, which is you can, this is how you package them for billing purposes. We have services and we have applications, what you call application are like network functions, VNF or PNF. And the logical infrastructure is pretty
consistent.
The infrastructure, logical infrastructure, network functioning, forwarding graph, etc., and real infrastructure, which is pretty standard in the industry, the way infrastructure is being used.
Well, the other thing here, guys, is that so a lot of these kinds of functional layers, and you know, this layer cake kind of is an eventual outcome from taking one part ETOM, one part ITIL. And then kind of merging and mapping the concepts and coming up with, you know, a set of functional elements that support the typical things IT does, no matter what domain it lives in, right? Whether it's telecom or enterprise service providers, which border in terms of, you know, availability requirements on what telecom would have. A lot of this is a blend, right? It's the best of all the worlds that I've seen.
This is an information view. We need to be careful on that.
Alex, another question. So essentially, we talk here a lot about APIs, but what about the case where you are asynchronously communicating information, right? For example, volumetric telemetry data, or some other kind of big data between entities, right? And also the communication could be even loosely coupled, right? I don't know whether the term API explicitly covers it.
I just wanted
to bring that about.
So you're right. I mean, to the extent that you have PubSub, it is a programmatic interface, right? The assumption is that you wouldn't be doing... In a world like what we're building, I think management by exception is what you kind of need to arrive at as the final model, right? Because of scale of what needs to happen.
Yeah.
And so the only way you're going to do that is not, you know, by divorcing yourself from like polling and really it's a subscription model. You know, I'm going to subscribe to a set of events. Somebody's going to publish them when they're in trouble and then I'm going to rush in to help. Or do nothing, depending on, you know, the severity.
Exactly. And maybe it's worth capturing. I mean, that's sort of our work happening in DMAP. So maybe it's worth capturing it also in this picture.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it not be DMAP, but, you know, a pubs, distributed pub sub, right? Sort of, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, so this is why this is why I hate the word bus, right? I prefer anything but bus. Because it's not an enterprise service bus. It's really an interconnect. There's a whole bunch of communication channels and data channels that reside within the bus or whatever, you know. That's why I like the word integration backplane. Because to me, that's more appropriate to what it really does.
Yeah, I would agree, because you could imagine having pub-sub interactions. You could also imagine needing some type of streaming capability from a VNF. So I like the interconnect notion or the integration backplane notions.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah.
I have one other point, Alex, if I could. Could you go to what I think was the chart just after this one?
Excuse me?
Could you go to the chart that I think came after this one?
Okay, this one?
Yeah, this one. So, question. If I look at this as an example of what a provider might have as their implementation of ONAP, let's say this represents a span of control of one provider's domain.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We haven't really talked about this yet, but it's been hinted at, but never not really formalized. If I have a provider to provider interaction, those interactions can be relatively simple, like we interconnect our networks and we just run across them. or they could be a more intimate interaction that I'll call an ONAP to ONAP interaction, where the resulting service is of more consistent, say, quality of service throughout, if I have the ONAP instances talking to one another. Do we need to show here, or maybe it's on your API diagram that shows how I could have a peer interaction between instances of ONAP that are under different domains of control, like provider A to provider B, or if I have a provider that's structured, let's say, by regional franchise organization, I might have an instance of ONAP in each region, in each franchise, and I might need an ONAP to ONAP type of interaction.
So it might be, I guess, you know, so there's a concept of community clouds that's not very widely used across any industry. But it sort of might be appropriate here. It all depends really on, you know, whether...
Would that cover any... So what I have in mind is something like you get a customer... Provider A gets a customer request, let's say for some multinational VPN. And yes, as part of setting it up, you know, SO does its thing, as we all know and love. But then, because there is the ability in this particular case, let's say, between provider A and B, for SO, let's say, to talk to the SO of the destination provider and have a higher level exchange so that when that VPN gets set up as part of it, it all sets up as one VPN rather than two interconnected VPNs, so I get more consistent quality of service. Let's say I do that with an SO to SO interaction. Would that be covered in your case?
Yes. You could certainly do that, but you have to be careful, right? Because so one use case is that we have Nirvana and everybody runs ONAP.
Yep.
And then it's easy because you can almost treat each OPCO as a region, right? And you can have a cloud of clouds model, right? And you can continue to, and there's, by the way, nothing here that precludes that from actually architecturally from happening. But that requires consistency in terms of identity schemes, in terms of shared state, in terms of policies, right? Because you're going to be reaching into somebody else's environment and talking to them and presenting credentials that they need to understand. And they also need to be aware of what they have to have these same use cases defined, for example.
That's right.
So Alex, the MEF work precisely addresses this type of question.
That's where I was going, right?
I thought about that. In the next presentation, so we can go through at least some of the models for that.
Yes, and so I think the reality is going to be that some people will have, you know, some OPCOs, and you know, not everyone is going to run ONAP. That's basically the way.
That's right. But I'm thinking of maybe it starts with the case where I have a single provider that, by its structure, is either franchise or regional based. They've got the best shot of pulling that off.
Yeah. It's possible. I guess, you know, we would need to, again, you know, I think MEF kind of took a stab at it, and if it works okay, then we'll be fine.
Yeah, the simple high-level answer.
I'm just saying we ought not to do anything here that would prohibit the ability to do that.
I don't think there's anything here that prohibits it. In fact,
I don't either. The only other thing is, we don't want to do it now, but maybe in your API diagram, there are certain interfaces that would, or maybe through the broker, the API broker, there are certain interfaces that would be relevant to do that. I'm just saying we should keep it in mind as we move forward.
Yes, of course. So this is kind of all I had. Now, I have a bunch of other stuff too, but I didn't, I was kind of going easy, right? So this is kind of where I landed. I don't know what the next steps might be. If you guys want to continue to congeal, you know, what Kevin presented, what Gil did, I think we could end up with a very, very nice kind of, not just the architecture view of things, but we can actually have a decent functional decomposition of what ONAP needs to have in terms of capabilities, and then identify gaps. And then maybe within each new release, we close a few gaps, one bit at a time, right?
In Chris's meeting notes, are all these presentations linked?
There's a contributions page. I don't have Alex's yet, but we'll get it posted later.
Okay.
And then we can link in once that's up on the wiki. Also, I am recording. This will be posted later today. It takes Zoom a while to do post-processing, but when it's available, I'll put that up on the wiki as well.
Now you tell me you're recording me. Oh, no.
Alex, and yeah, I think this is great. So one thought is wherever we know at least where we have some specifics around where we can bring value, let's say working at optimization framework like multi-cloud and, you know, VNF modeling. So there, yeah, those can be maybe more even explicitly brought out shortly and say, hey, we're going to, we have a plan, we know what to do.
Okay, if we agree with the layer cakes, if we take what Gil did, if we take some of the other diagrams and some of the other concepts that are in his slide deck that I didn't even want to replicate, because I agree with them, you know, 1,000%, we can now refine each one of these blocks. And I actually have a functional decomposition, which is really, really fine grained for each one of these. I just didn't want to impose that on the team. But if you guys are interested, I can bring those in and we can go through them. It's an eye chart, but it actually goes, you know, through all the functional capabilities you would want in each one of these.
Yeah, that'd be useful. Could you at least maybe, you know, submit that into the files so that we can take a look at that offline?
Yeah, I may need to. I simplified the architecture view from the one that I have, from the one that functional decomposition is based on, but I can probably do something. We'll see.
Yeah, like I said, this lines up pretty well with LSO as well, so we need to maybe look at, you know, some of the various things that we can make sure we continue.
Yeah, what worries me is that, you know, we can sit here and talk about all this stuff, right? But it seems like, you know, we need to kind of go outside of this community maybe and start explaining, you know, cloud building 101.
Yeah, that we need to make a model. So I think Kevin, you know, Kevin's stuff is a good start too, because let's actually get the model together. And then I think we can actually, you know, say here's really the types of entities that are represented inside each of these layers and how they relate to each other.
Well, let's go for it. Let's start, right? And then we can explain it to the other team.
And I think tied to the functional view, maybe we can bring to the table, you know, some of the specific, you know, abstracted out component functionality, whether it be orchestrator or service design and creation. And
so there's another, so let me say this. There's another effort in the industry which is about to get formalized as an industry specification group inside Etsy. And it's focused on zero-touch computing. And a lot of what you guys saw here, because we operated with no IP restrictions, I took a lot of the ideas that, you know, we were discussing in that forum, and guess what? It mapped so well to what we were doing from an ONAP perspective that actually, you know, some of these slides I adapted from that work. If you take that whole sort of, you know, approach, there's already a definition of interface reference points. And a bunch of other things that we've done or proposed, right, and threw that out into the world. So we can refine this view even more, and, you know, in terms of a straw man, right, and keep going. So, anyhow, this is it.
So Alex, quick question before we move on. The position of the external APIs covered all the service design, and it seems to imply, and I would like you to clarify, that applications and customers could get access to the bus. Is that the case, or is it going to be the service access manager that mediates the access by the personas into the platform?
You see, you're asking all the right. Yeah, so I'm missing a few little arrows here. I apologize, but yeah. So, I mean, one way to look at it is if you want to do self-service kind of stuff, two ways you got to do it. One is you need to be able to build a bunch of, service templates, let's say, on your own somehow, which tells me that the service design tools may need to be decoupled and made standalone. So anybody, any customer could say, well, I don't really like what you guys are providing, but I want one of these. And for the right price, you could instantiate it for them and charge them through the nose because of the decoupling. The other way you can interact with the system is through in an Amazon style, where through ad hoc API calls, you can actually build up a very sophisticated environment. Oh, and then wouldn't it be nice to be able to save that environment away into a service template, which you can then subsequently use, for others. So to me, there's a lot to think about in terms of the interaction with ONAP and how it might need to be exposed. To me, every interaction goes through the service access manager because that sort of mitigates access to the system in terms of identity and capabilities and whatnot.
Right.
All right.
Great. Thank you, Alex.
Hello, Chris.
That's great. Would you drop your screen share and then I'll move on to the next one?
Yep, I'm done.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Should we post this to the modeling subcommittee page as well, or somehow make them aware of this? Because I kind of feel like that's a whole separate world happening there.
Yeah, so maybe you can just put a link to it over there.
Yeah,
we need a practice of submitting it once and linking everywhere. I see
it
duplicates, and it's kind of confusing.
Okay.
I guess it's going to bring order to us.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you. Can everybody see my screen?
Yep.
Perfect. This is a presentation. We talked a couple of weeks ago during Gil's presentation about MEF, and I wanted to show the MEF LSO framework in the context of ONAP and how that may play in. I think it also ties in with Alex's presentation in terms of the layering. I mostly took this from the MEF 55 spec with a lot of feedback from Andy and Raghu, who are our MEF experts. So please, for those of you who are active in MEF, if I have something wrong, please correct me. Just to flash up, here's our current functional architecture. And mostly what I'm going to be focusing on is the right side of the diagram. The service orchestration, resource orchestration, and then the controller layer, which maps in to the various MEF layers. Let's see, I think someone's using the annotation. Just to get us started, as Gil pointed out, the resource orchestration is getting us into some trouble because it's ambiguous and insufficient. And this is the quote from Gil's presentation. The EDC terminology is not sufficient to describe the ONAP problem space. We agreed last time that we were going to talk about some of the industry frameworks. So I'm going to just bring up LSO in that context. I tried to envision a few service provider deployment models to see how this might work in practice. I probably didn't consider everything, but I considered a few to get us started for the discussion. Next, MEF terminology and definitions. These are from the MEF 55 specification and then also the MEF LSO white paper. Some of the more important ones to look at are SOF, service orchestration functionality. I'm sorry, someone is using the annotation tools. Can you please stop for this presentation? Let me see if I can erase this.
I think, Chris, you might have to unshare and share again just to remove all that, I think.
Maybe. No, I can do it on my end. Okay. There we go. Some of the key terms are the service orchestration functionality is SOF. So it's a service management layer functionality for automating a service lifecycle. I won't read the whole definition. You can look at yourself. The next one is infrastructure control and management, which is the domain-specific network and topology management. And then the element control and management, which gets even more specific, supporting the individual elements.
So what does domain specific mean here? Because the way I understood infrastructure control and where Alex presented was what we call multi-vim, the infrastructure, the cloud infrastructure.
So ICM would handle multi-vim because each control domain would be a separate domain within ICM.
Yeah, so ICM, so if infrastructure control management is a vim layer, then I think...
But I think this goes beyond that, if I understand this correctly, right? Because the vim creates an abstraction, right? It's an undercloud or whatever you want to call it. If you have direct access to resources, right, if you own them, if they're physical network functions or other things that you directly own, you need to be able to manage them at a much lower level.
Yeah, but still, talk about infrastructure here. The ICM is talking infrastructure, not anything about that.
So let me go on. I've got a diagram. So
it seems, at least it seems to me that domain is equivalent to a multi-vim, a domain instance is equivalent to a multi-vim cloud instance, at least from what I read. Like what you guys say.
So domain
seems like.
I think there are two aspects of this. I think there's a location aspect, and I think there's also a technology aspect, that you may have a different domain for one technology versus another.
Yeah, that's true as well.
That's sort of what is covered in the multi-vim cloud effort, right? So basically, different vims from different providers, and also when you say cloud, I mean, basically, you're talking IaaS and Azure, GCP, right? Public cloud and even private cloud. That's precisely what we're trying to cover. So I don't know whether this is anything unique and different from that perspective.
Well, at this point, I just want to make sure that we're clear on the terminology when I get deeper into the presentation and start showing some of these layers. I want to ground us back to what's in the spec.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. Also, I'm introducing a new term in this presentation, and thanks for the suggestion, Andy. We've been having such issue with the term resource orchestrator that here I'm going to be using infrastructure orchestrator, or IO. I think this better aligns with the MEF terminology and the MEF layering. And I'm not implying any change in functionality versus what we've talked about before. This is the old RO, just with a new name, hopefully to clarify it a little bit better. And so I put a definition.
I think that's where the confusion is. The RO, the way Gil is defined, and Gil can correct me, is not same as IO you are defining here. That is infrastructure control, infrastructure orchestration, which is multi-vim responsibility. And nobody's suggesting that SO should do what infrastructure or vim layer would do. The RO used there was VNF and the network. But Alex had application is what Gil has RO. Gil and Kevin, is that a fair summary or?
I think we're okay. I think if you assume a two-layer resource model, then you're doing dynamic bindings to actual resources, and that may result in a vim function call, but you still need to orchestrate, right? And so this still works.
So here's my definition for what the IO is. I'm using kind of a hybrid from the MEF55 spec, since this is all in the context of MEF LSO in this presentation. So just when you see IO, this is what I'm talking about. So first, here's the MetaFLSO reference architecture. Towards Alex's presentation, they have it divided up into customer domains, service provider domains, and partner domains. And then they've got these four layers with the business applications, and then the service orchestration, infrastructure control and management, and then element control and management, and defined interfaces between them. I believe that some of these interfaces are better defined than others, particularly the Presto interface, and I think Interlude for the SDN domain are pretty well defined, but in some of the other domains, it's still work in progress. Andy and Raghu, did I get that right?
But again, this picture doesn't say anything inconsistent with what we have been talking about or what Gil
and that's good. That's right. Good because this is the work that MEF has been doing for the last several years, right? So if this maps fairly well into what ONAP is doing, we actually have a good reference model that fits the same context, right?
Well, and in fact, what's labeled here as Interlude looks like it was covering the case I was discussing with Alex earlier.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'll get into that further in the presentation. This is straight from the spec, so I just want to make sure everybody sees this before I put my interpretation on top of it.
And also important to note, this is an abstract model, so Chris will talk about some of the distinctions as well.
Okay. Great.
Yep.
Yeah, thank you. Here is my.
I'm sorry. Let me ask a question about that before we jump on. So the service orchestration function I shown in this diagram is that representing what Mano would refer to as network function virtualization orchestration, as well as the layer above, or is the layer above the business applications, or is it even map
clean? No. Let me actually go a couple. Here's where I think. Etsy NFE goes in. So soft goes on top of Mano. So the NFEO and the VIM would fit into the infrastructure control and management layer, and the VNFM is more in the element control and management layer. Just to be clear on this, it's much clearer in the SDN domain. MEF has done a lot of work with ONF on the relationship between the SOF and the SDN controllers. I think it's a little bit more work.
So in MEF 55, we explicitly say that NFEO is another embodiment of an ICM entity. And this, if you think about Alex's presentation, he had the distinction between a service block and a service component block. I think he called it services and applications or something like that, there was two different blocks. And so you can think of the NFEO as managing a component of the end-to-end service in this model.
And what is SOF doing in above NFEO?
That's the service orchestration entity. We call it a service orchestration function, which is consists of many of the different components that you see in an ONAP. It would include the SO, it would include the inventory, it would include whatever catalog. So it kind of is an abstract entity that could consist of one or more functionality. And so we called it a neutral service orchestration function.
So why NFEO not doing what SOF is doing? Why NFEO is below SOF?
So you have to, first of all, ask the question, what is the service that is being sold to the customer? And the service that is being sold to the customer consists of one or more components of that service. And one component would be orchestrating a set of quote-unquote network services that Etsy calls. There could be a variety of components, if you will. Some of them WAN components that is managed by an SDN controller. Some of them could be a VNF service that is being managed by an NFE orchestrator. So this is something that has been debated about even in the Etsy, where they have spilled split the NFEO in some conversations as a service orchestrator versus a resource orchestrator. So there has been this confusion that has been sort of floating
around. For me, SOF sounds more like OSS function than really, because you're talking about customer order being decomposed and sent to different domain-specific orchestration to get it part of service.
And that is a key aspect where your end-to-end service view and a service model is now captured as part of a separate entity, and you can think of it of disaggregation of these of the orchestration stack as well as some of the OSS stack in order to enable more agile rollout and manipulating of service state, if you will, right? And that's the whole thesis behind having the separate functionality. But again, when Chris shows it in the context of ONAP, he will have a slide that sort of combines everything.
Yes.
But this is the classical dissonance between the transport view and the telecom functions view. And the misunderstanding that happens between the idea of services.
The problem here I see with end-to-end is the definition of end-to-end is still not very complete. Because, for example, even the legacy, the MSO here, the LSO is not end-to-end because it's covered not the legacy domain and the domain where there's no existing active inventory yet. So nothing like managing the layer one, like the repeaters of fibers on the street, or planning for inventory not exist in AI. Okay. So that just cannot be end-to-end.
So the vision of SOF and LSO was end-to-end, right? So SOF, LSO SOF contains the end-to-end view of multiple layer domains, including hybrid domains, right?
Because currently,
the legacy domain
is covered by OSS. So LSO is even not end-to-end. It's mostly grow up from EBC and carrier Ethernet for active inventory.
So just to be clear, when we use the term end-to-end, what do we mean by that, right? The end-to-end is if a bank of Raghu is buying a service from a service provider, Alex, it is in the context of that service where in MEF we use the term the uni to uni as end-to-end service. And you can have the end-to-end context defined from the product that has been sold or the service that has been customer-facing service as Alex used, right? It is in that context that we want to sort of start from. And Alex had a nice way of sort of decomposing that. So I don't understand what you mean by fiber or layer one. Those are all visible to the infrastructure control and management layer. The SDN controller would have very deep state information of its domain.
No EMS can manage the fiber, the dark fiber, or the manhole on the street, or the rack space, or the powers. Okay. And these are actually the most expensive operations in operators, not the active.
Yeah. So can I comment on that? I agree. The way I would look at this is I think you need to, let's say a customer buys a service, and let's say they do not have any physical connectivity into their premises yet. Seems to me that when they order that service with their BSS, it's up to the BSS order decomposition and management function to say, this customer is ordering a multi-site VPN, but there are six locations where they don't even have physical connectivity into their premises. Let me contact the legacy systems, BSSs and OSSs, that are responsible for getting fiber deployment scheduled to those premises. Let me fire off that process, which happens in a legacy way. And then a week later, days later, however long it takes for that provider to provide it, an indication comes back to the BSS that says, you got the right physical connectivity now. Now that BSS can place the rest of the order down to the SOF, which then is responsible for doing all the stuff we've talked about, all the stuff that ONAP does to do the, I'll say, provisioning, instantiation of all the functions that are going to ride on top of that physical connectivity. Seems to me that's a reasonable way to look at it, because I don't think we want to fiber planning and scheduling long-running processes that might last days, weeks, or longer through a loop through ONAP.
Correct. Good point.
Just to clarify, are you envisioning some business process workflow, let's say, that might include, you know, interaction with legacy systems, then some work with ONAP, then a little bit more with other systems, a little bit more with ONAP?
Correct. I'm basically saying I think SS, a function in the BSS layer, say the ordering management function, that needs to decompose that customer request, which could be complex, and understand which pieces are best fulfilled by which systems.
Right.
So is that what's meant by SOF? I mean, so I could see that you might, a service provider might want to use something above ONAP to facilitate the physical, like Paul just said, as well as, you know, even CPE and things like that. But it's clearly devoted to physical, and it would not be working in the ONAP space. It might hand a request off to ONAP, right? But it's not in the details of.
In the example I described, the BSS, let me just call it the BSS layer, determines what chunks of work need to get done. Those, in my example, those that required pulling a real fiber out to real premises to get real physical connectivity were done because it saw that didn't exist. When that completes, it says, okay, now I can have all of the, I'll say logical functions for lack of a better word, all of the provisioning of the capabilities on that need to be done on top of that physical connectivity. Mm-hmm. So I think the BSSs need to be, you know, aware of what it means to fulfill a service, some of which will mean physical things, including digging trenches and pulling fiber, and some of it will mean the set of functions that we talk about in ONAP.
Mm-hmm. Right. Here's my mapping of ONAP, that it sits underneath that business application layer. So you're right, Paul. I think that extra process.
Chris, there is one confusion that I'm not sure I get it, because what is RO here, resource or cluster? If you think that remove ambiguity, how does it remove ambiguity?
So that's what I'm trying to get to. So in this presentation, I'm calling it IO, and I'll show you where that fits as we go.
Did IO come from?
It's what we called RO. It's in the layering in the past.
Where is the term IO? Does MIF has word IO term IO?
It's infrastructure orchestration. So
that's the infrastructure. So RO in ONAP is not infrastructure. That's the point I was making. I think we are confusing RO versus infrastructure.
But let's get through Chris's just a map of the layering. Let me just get through this, and then if you have questions or comments or we want to talk about that, let's do that at the end. For the purposes of this presentation, I'm just going to call it IO, where we would have had RO in prior presentations. So just in the three-layer orchestration that we've been talking about, this is just that middle piece.
But IO is not infrastructure. That's the point I'm making. So the infrastructure controller you have here is true. That's where the VIM and the cloud provider provide. That's not RO.
Let's talk about this at the end. I'm just trying to use the MEF layering terminology to kind of show where this would fit in. Let's cover that at the end. Let me just show the rest of the presentation where this might go. And then if we want to debate terms, let's cover
I'm
that.
Okay, but if the mapping is wrong, then I think I don't know how we can proceed. If the mapping, the IO here is infrastructure.
So Vimal, in your definition, what do you consider a resource?
A VNF is a resource? a PNF is a resource, an application, what Alex has, application is a resource.
Correct.
So, what I had was two layers of resources, the physical,
yeah,
the real, and the logical, right? And I think the real layer is way below this.
Correct. And okay. So when we, so maybe the term infrastructure is probably confusing, but the intent for that block, ICM block, was to manage resources or components of services. And it could be VNFs, PNFs, it could be any set of functions, including the actual platforms on which the resources run. So it covers both the platforms as well as the functionality in this particular block, okay?
And that's correct. And with respect to also, that was the vision of ICM.
Okay. To go through this, this would be my mapping for how ONAP today, R2 infrastructure, or the R2 architecture that we've been discussing, fits into the LSO model that the SDN controllers and AppC and VNFM would clearly be in the infrastructure control and management layer. SO is in the service orchestration layer. And then the IO block is kind of between. Most of the time, I'm going to show it in the infrastructure control and management layer for a domain-specific orchestrator. Most of the time, it'll be colored the same as those boxes. Here, I wanted to pull it up because one of the things when I was talking to Raghu that he mentioned is that in some cases, there may be a need where you're doing ordering in a particular region where you'd be able to talk directly to the IO to set up the services. And so in that case, it would essentially go up into the service orchestration layer. But through most of the presentation, you're going to see it in the ICM layer.
Where does Vim fit into this?
There's no.
Where does Vim fit into this picture? Is it part of IO or is it part of?
The Vim is in the infrastructure control and management layer. So using the Mano terms.
I think that's broken to some extent, right? Because there are lots of different Vims. They're pluggable, right? So are you saying there's an abstraction layer or some plug-and-play framework to integrate the Vim in? Or are we talking about actually it being part of that layer? Because I'm not sure I understand how.
Yeah.
Now I'm confused.
Yeah, so that's, Chris, go back to your picture, next picture you have. This is where the Vim is missing here. That's the part I'm trying to understand. Where does the Vim?
The Vim to me is the element control and management kind of thing, right? It's just you. It's a vending.
That's for VNFs. So EMS is for VNFs.
I agree. The role of EMS and VNFM doesn't change between ONAP and Mano yet. In ONAP, here we're saying it's an infrastructure management and control, and in the Mano view, it's element management and control. And there's no EMS in ONAP anyways.
Yeah.
Which is another issue.
I believe some of the teams were working on drivers for it, and this is just where I believe that it would fit. We have it, using our layering.
Is that the third-party driver, SDNC driver component that you were talking
about? It would either be under SDNC, or it would be, I believe the VFC team is building drivers for EMSs, so it could be under there as well.
So when we say service, when we define service in this diagram, or we just make sure we're talking about the same thing, we're thinking of an ONAP service is what you're interpreting, right, Chris? It's a service that is can be delivered in real time. There's no fiber laying and stuff like that, right? In
right.
This diagram, that's how we're interpreting service orchestration. So to Paul's point, if we need to lay fiber, that would be up in the OSS, BSS, business application space. Do we all agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah, we're not orchestrating any kind of construction or other types of activities for augmenting the infrastructure that's not logical.
It could be fun.
Yeah.
If you're doing logical traffic engineering, if you have like virtual trunks, yeah, you might do some virtual trunk management at orchestration. But if you're actually building stuff that has to be done through, you know, you have workforce management all involved in that, that's not
I'm thinking more like CPE. CPE, would CPE be up in that business? If a customer needs a UCPE, for instance, so a white
right,
box.
So ordering and delivering that is outside the scope, right? So that's probably OSS that's, you know, responsible for making sure the customer gets that on-premise system is wired up correctly. But once that's there, instantiating VNFs on that white box, if you will, is part of what orchestration would deal with.
Was your understanding that ONAP would take on some of that as well?
No. I'm just clarifying. I just want to make sure that we all have a clear understanding, because there is an aspect of service up in that business application or product or something, right? So we are not talking about that. Just want to clarify that we're all saying that service is the same thing.
Right.
It's a real-time capable. Does service include like a So in Etsy, my understanding from my presentation anyway, is that a service, according to Etsy Mano, is comprised of VNFs and only VNFs.
It's a network service. You have to be careful because it's very limited. It's limited to infrastructure only.
So there's a concept of a service, like I could offer a AVPN to a customer, a VPN to a customer, private on virtual network, by taking slices of virtual PE routers, VERFs, right, and configuring those. So I could define a service that could be implemented in real time with no infrastructure deployment, where I provide something like a VPN to a customer, and I believe that's part of the scope of ONAP.
Yes.
Do we agree with that?
And that's part of the scope of LSO as well. If you want to think about this, just as an example, a virtual CPE that has the connectivity services as part of it, and then maybe a virtual firewall, so that there's the VNF aspect. So it stretches across multiple domains, including both the connectivity and the application services.
Okay.
And the idea is end-to-end, across, from the customer, as Raghu was saying, and possibly across multiple service providers.
Correct. And I think we need to be also, there is a distinction between a service offering and a managed service offering, where the managed service offering could be a bundled service that includes the management of the customer prem box on behalf of the customer, etc. So that's all sort of more complicated product bundles, if you will, right? But each of those components in that product bundle could be a service on its own, and we will have to treat them as independent or together. That's a distinction that we may want to think about later on. But at the end of the day, the MEF view is there is a demarcation of responsibility between the service provider and the customer. And if we were to look at it in this context, then ONAP's responsibility is from that demarcation to the other and a peer demarcation points.
I get that part. So when the LSO order comes in, LSO talks about what they called order lifecycle management or something very similar to this. So the order can be modified, order can be canceled, order can be augmented, blah, blah. All that order lifecycle management is in OSS in our view, ONAP.
Correct. Yeah. And in the LSO view, we call it the business app layer, which includes all that management. Correct.
So when I read MEF 55, it says basically that order gets decomposed and each domain is asked to orchestrate particular service. So say, for example, if I want to have a customer VPN service, that once everything has been verified, that the connectivity is there, then you ask ONAP to say, go and deploy VPN. And that is what they call service orchestration. The way I read that, at least, the service orchestration is doing all the things that are necessary to deploy that VPN. It might call the infrastructure to get some cloud resources, some connectivity forwarding part, And that is what Presto is. So Legato is what our SO is supposed to be doing, which is the complete orchestration of that VPN.
Correct.
Exactly.
And to your point,
guys,
Vimal,
maybe the thing to do is to take a simple use case and actually run through the layers and then try to build a model at the same time. Just, you know, figure out, you know, what goes where.
That's right. Actually coming later in this deck.
There
are a couple of deployment scenarios. The other thing I want to point out before we go too far is that this can be iterative. What I wanted to show here is just multiple infrastructure control and management layers, potentially using, you know, the Presto interface between it. Since the MEF LSO model is logical to begin with, you know, we can see this when we're mapping into Alex's presentation, you know, the question earlier about where does the Vim go? It can be layered also in ICM underneath some of the other pieces of the infrastructure control. So this can be somewhat hierarchical within that layer.
I want to make sure I understand. So, Chris, so on your prior slide, I just want to make sure. So, so if I have a service which is comprised only of a slice or a configuration, don't say slice, I'm sorry, a configuration on a VNF, like a VRF. I want to sell a VRF to somebody, right? So the service would be the service itself, and there'd be one resource under that service, the configuration, the VRF itself. Mm-hmm. Are you in this picture? Are you thinking that there would be an IO? It would be IO's responsibility to manage that resource, that configuration?
So say that question. Let me go through, because I think there are a couple of different deployment options, okay. And I'm going to go through that in the next couple of slides to show a couple of ways. You know, this is one of the things when I spoke with the MEF experts, in some cases it makes sense to have it there. In some cases you could probably do without it.
And I think you can also think in terms of Alex's, the MSB, where it would allow a sort of an internal API that could bypass if needed, depending on policies, if you will.
Yep. So let's see, we talked about these. Let me go on. Let me talk about a few different use cases for how we may want to put this into the architecture. So again, using the MEF layers, business application, service orchestration, ICM, and ECM. This first one is multi-region support. We have one instance of ONAP that goes across three regions. And so here I show region one being Chicago, region two being Frankfurt, and region three being Tokyo. In this case, my definition of region is a geographic area where the network resources are under single administrative control. There are a couple of ways to do this, and I'll show another federated way in a few slides. This is...
But again, I think we are confusing two terms. We are saying that ONAP is supporting multiple data centers. There is never ONAP is never supposed to be just one data center only. It is so SO is supporting VNFs which are located in multiple data centers. I'm not sure why we need to have a separate orchestrator in Chicago and Frankfurt and Tokyo.
Because you might have different regions with different sets of policies that you know may not do the same thing under all conditions. So
what happens if I have only one instance of ONAP deployed?
So I think the best way to look at it is to say that, you know, so remember the hierarchy of orchestration that was in Gil's slides? I think I'm assuming that hierarchy would exist here. I'm assuming that there's some sort of a mesh from a consumption point at the top, and no matter where I go to ask for something, it gets instantiated in all the right places at the same time.
Yeah. Right. I think that's true. You might want to geographic. I think what's missing from this picture is there's a dimension missing, right? And
yes.
That is the service. Like if this is a VPN service, right, then I've got to build a VERF in Chicago, a VERF in Frankfurt, a VERF in Tokyo, right?
Yes.
But they're all VERFs. They're all the same type of thing. So there's something about IO left, middle, and right that's the same. It's the same VERF RO manager, if you will, but it's different instances of it.
Yeah, I'm on the same wavelength. I think it would be dangerous to say if I have multiple I have as many IOs as I have different policies. I think I might have different IOs in different regions for scalability, maybe for performance.
Perfect.
But not because I have different policies.
Perfect.
I think one orchestration engine, when fed with the appropriate policy metadata, can orchestrate that completely. I would strongly advise we not say if I have two sets of policies, that determines the number of orchestrators I have. I think you determine the number of orchestrators based on some of the things we spoke about earlier, like am I a franchise model, you know, in a regional configuration, or do I need it for certain performance aspects, etc. But I don't think it's because I've got a policy here and there, and I need two different orchestrators to do it. Policy is policy. I can compile and act on those policies through a common engine. If there's an issue of performance, I got it. Scalability, okay. But not because otherwise to say I have the number of orchestrators equals the number of policies, I don't think that's a path we want to go down.
The other conclusion you can draw from this picture is that you have an orchestrator for every data center you have. We don't have a separate SDN controller FC for every data center or every region. Means you can have multiple instances of any of these to support scalability. But what I think we should start with a simple use case to say I have one instance of ONAP that support hundreds of data centers. And request comes in to say a customer says, I want a VPN from location A to location B, you will have one CE in data center one, other CE in data center two, and you have to create a VERF between those two.
So just to clarify, Vimal, just to clarify, I hope you are not confusing the term region with an OpenStack region. This is just a handle as it shows on the bottom left. It's just a collection of resources under a single SDNC.
Well, but let's be careful. Let's look at a use case, right? So you may have regions that are operated, you know, based on some federation of policies, some of which are global, some are local. That region may be required to be standalone for all sorts of reasons. Data governance, you know, political, geopolitical boundaries, all sorts of things. So you have to be prepared to support that region in an autonomous way.
Alex, I don't disagree at all what you're saying, but I'm saying that let's start with a simple use case to say I have one instance of ONAP deployed for a service provider who has hundreds of data centers. Show me how that flow would be. When the order comes for a customer to say, get me a VPN for Chicago, Chicago and New York, show me, and I have one instance of ONAP supporting all these data centers. I would like to see the flow there.
So it's
and Alex, I agree with your point. I think the distinction I was making, while we need to be able to have the flexibility to do what you said, that should not be required. In other words, I should not be forced to have an orchestrator, let's say, by region, unless there are reasons to do so, is what I'm saying.
Right.
I mean, it can be done with a common orchestration engine. There may be reasons why I don't want to do it. I don't want to present this as though it is mandatory that if you have a regional situation, I may need multiple orchestrators for all kinds of reasons, political, governmental rules, whatever it is. But I don't want to be required to have that multiple orchestration implementation if I don't need to.
No, it's not required. This is one way that some operators may choose to deploy it. What I wanted to call out is the use.
So,
I'm getting a bunch of noise on the line.
I think I see what Vimal is bringing up as an independent one, sort of a workflow mapping, right? We cannot just call out sort of the some blocks, right? We need to depict how the workflow is going to look like. That's probably, hey, this is a mess, and, you know, do an end-to-end workflow comparison, right? I think that, you know, block level. Sort of this is so high level that, yeah, it, I mean, you can say either it all looks good or all doesn't look good, right? Sort of.
I think so. For separate reason, we need to have multiple controller, multiple instead of SO. All that is good, but I think we have to start with a simple use case.
Yeah.
As said, Paul said, do not force me to. I have to have separate IO and SO, even though I have one instance of ONAP and my scalability is sufficient to support using a single orchestration engine.
So that's coming up in a couple of slides, but this isn't saying you have to force anyone to do any particular deployment. This is one deployment option.
But I think by having the separate term called SO and IO, basically says, the simple thing I want to see is that how does it work for a very simple use case, which is I have one instance of orchestration.
Yeah, just let me get through a couple more slides. I wanted to show a couple of places where the IO plays out. One of these is this multi-region. So let me get through a couple of slides, and then you'll see an instance where it's the simpler deployment case. Let's see. The next thing. Let's see if this is going to advance. The next area would be multi-technology support. So this is what we have today. Essentially, we have SO, and we've got a domain for SDN, we have a domain for NFV. What if we want to add, let's say, IoT in the future? How would we do it? How much do we want to add? How much code do we want to add into SO versus do we want to add this down below? This could also be Kubernetes for another example. If we want to plug a different technology into ONAP, how would we do this? And then with IoT, possibly we have different controllers. Maybe you've got one for all join, for example, and then another one for Apple HomeKit and the Google, what are they calling, HomeCore and Amazon. So you may have multiple IoT controllers for these different potential configurations that you want to have. One common abstraction layer that I'm calling it IO IoT, or Kubernetes for adding containers or something else. We may not want to add that all the way up in SO. We may just want to have a common interface like the Presto interface to be able to add that for scalability.
Sorry, go ahead, Vimal.
I think we are really confusing everything. First of all, let's say Kubernetes. Kubernetes to me is infrastructure, whether I use a VM, a virtual machine, or a Kubernetes or a container. Isn't that the Vim responsibility and not the SO layer, the controller layer? That's number one. Number two, to say to have a separate orchestrator for Internet of Things, what does that mean? We have to have an orchestrator to support, if I have different network function, whether it's a RAN function or whether it's a core function or EPC or IMS, orchestration would use all these pieces together. So that's where we need orchestrate end-to-end.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So I guess I've sort of lost the thread, Chris. Are you proposing that we have IOs on a per technology basis or IOs on a per geography basis or a combination of both? I'm losing.
Yeah, it could be a combination of both. And that was something I tried to mention earlier. It's for a particular domain. So it could be a technology domain. It could be a geographic domain. The common thing I'm trying to call out is the need for common interfaces along the lines of what Alex was saying earlier in the context of the MEF LSO. Generally, this would be the Presto interface. So what we've been talking about up to this point would be using the Presto interface between the different layers. So under SO into the IO, or from IO to the controller layer.
Right, and the key thing is you're representing a common abstraction. No matter which IO type I'm talking to or where it's located, I'm talking in the same abstraction. So I'm requesting, you know, connectivity type things. I'm requesting instantiation of network function type things, and how those things link together.
So here's where I'm falling off the log. If take the IoT example, you have an IoT controller, Chris, in the lower right.
Yeah.
That is a specific controller to the IoT technology world.
Yep.
Why would I have an IO above it labeled IO IoT? Wouldn't we want a common orchestration engine capable of receiving metadata in some language like Tosca that tells it what to do? So in the case of IoT, I send the IO IoT metadata. It then uses to interact with the IoT controller. If I'm sending NFV information or SDN information, take the SDN one. If I'm sending SDN metadata, I send that metadata to the same IO type, but now it's capable of taking action on that common metadata, say Tosca for SDN. So what I'm saying is I could see multiple instances of IO if you wanted it for, say, performance reasons, or scalability, got it, but I don't see different IO types based on technology. I see different controller types that those IOs would drive, but wouldn't we want a common engine whose personality I change and determine based on the metadata I feed it, rather than saying I have an IO of type NFV, an IO of type IoT, and an IO of type SDN? I think I change the type, so to speak, by giving it different metadata that's relevant to SDN or NFV or IoT, and I get the technology distinction at the controller layer. So above the controller, I'm less technology dependent. I think that's really what we're shooting for.
And you really are providing that good common abstraction by funneling it into this common IO that would then interpret the model, the metadata that you're giving it to determine what specific types of controllers are involved.
I think that's what Paul is saying, that you can't.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So I interpret the IO SDN, the IO NFV, and the IO IoT as different types of IOs. I would say we want one type of IO,
and it does
one of those three functions based on the type of metadata we give it.
It wants the IO that presents a common abstraction northbound, and then it interacts with specific controller type thing.
But help me. Yeah. So
I'm confused. IoT is not a, there's not a specific network element called IoT. IoT. So we don't have a, we don't define deploy RAN just for IoT. We deploy RAN that provides services for IoT, for web browsing, for your mission critical solution, connected car. So I don't see there is a thing called IoT controller. You can divide a slice to support different type of services, whether it's a voice service, mobile broadband service, or massive internet of things. So it confuses me when we say we have IoT controller.
Yeah, probably have APCs for certain IoT applications.
But yeah, I guess there should not be IoT. This APC is the one that controls your RAN. And RAN support IoT, RAN support mobile broadband, RAN support mission critical communication, all those things.
I think the intent, probably, if I'm trying to think through this a little bit more, maybe Chris's intent was that there are these IoT endpoints that could be of specific style or type, and maybe there is one implementation that might have a controller that controls the state of those endpoints. Now, you are right, the backend infrastructure like the RAN or whatever is a separate topic, but I think the intent, Chris, if I'm not mistaken, you were thinking about the endpoint of that.
Yeah.
And I don't see how ONAP is controlling endpoint. There are billions of endpoints.
So let me finish here. Let me respond to this. My intention here is, how are we going to introduce new technologies? You know, right now, ONAP is covering SDN and NFV, and We'll work on that for a while, but I think that we're going to want to scale and start adding in other approaches, IoT being one of the obvious ones on the horizon. You know, this could be, I don't know, blockchain. It could be something else that we wanted to plug into ONAP we thought was really important. How do we do this? You know, we want to do this with a model-driven approach, clearly. We may want to do it in a modular approach also, so that we don't necessarily impact the code for you know, the existing orchestrator. Maybe this is experimental. Maybe this is you know, smaller scale, that we want to have a way to click it in.
So Chris, you're trying to come up with an example of a new thing that we hadn't thought of before that doesn't fit into our ONAP components that we've already defined,
right?
Controllers and AppSees and things like that. I mean, you think IoT is a good example of that? I guess maybe, or you just use maybe instead of IoT, you just mean X. There's something we haven't thought of before, and
I can call it X if that helps the discussion. Yes, we can just call it the X. The item, if we haven't thought about it before and we want to be able to have a pathway to add something in.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if we haven't thought of it before, it's not obvious that adding it in at that level is the right thing to do. I mean, it's a little broad.
I think if we divide orchestration by technology, I think would be cause more problem than solve anything, because almost everything we do, yeah, we'll use multiple technologies. We have RAN, right. We have transport, we have core, and everything. So if you have a orchestrator for RAN, which is separate from core, and if somebody wants a service, we talk to three different orchestrators before we can get anything done.
Yeah, I think we want, I go back to the model-driven point. If we want orchestration, let's say the I.O., to be model-driven, then we really want a common engine, and we want to define the language used to talk to that engine, and that metadata can determine the behavior of what gets orchestrated. Now, at the layer below, I think we need to separate the control layer from the orchestration layer. At the control layer, there may be reasons at some point for introducing a new type of controller. And by the way, Chris, I think we talked about having a set of principles, mm-hmm, architecture principles, that say under what circumstances would I need a new controller versus just give an existing controller different metadata, right? In other words, at what point do we say, well, I can't really give this particular controller this type of metadata, I need a different controller type. So, but I think they're two separate cases. I think we could talk about the I.O. layer separate from the control layer. And I'd encourage agreement on the notion that we want to be model driven, and that at the I.O. layer, there should not be a technology dependency. There's a dependency, I achieve that technology independence by having metadata. So when I'm defining the service or the capability through the design and creation platform, I create the metadata necessary so that I/O can take the appropriate action to interface to an SDN controller or an AppC or a VNFM. But I don't think we want controller types based on technology.
Yeah,
it would defeat the model-driven purpose.
Orchestrator types, yep, agreed.
We don't want orchestrator based on technology. We don't want orchestrator for RAN versus orchestrator for EPC versus orchestrator for IMS.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
So let's move on.
So Chris, let me ask you this. So I brought up the recursion question before, that if we're doing a VERF, right? If the service is configuring a VERF, and that VERF is provided by a VPE, and that VPE is actually another service type, you could have that pattern extend itself to many, 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 many times recursively, right? So are you envisioning that there's a back loop between the I.O. back to the S.O.?
Actually, no. Going back to this, I'm envisioning that you might have the recursion within the infrastructure control and management layer, so multiple versions of the Presto interface. So this is something
If I have a service type called a VPE, let's say VPE, which is a VNF, is something we want to deploy separately, and so we package it up as a service, and capacity planners can say, oh, I want a VPE here, I want a VPE there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So VPE instance. So then a request comes into the service orchestration layer that says, give me a VPE instance over here, and the VPE as a service is known, in your case, there'd be an SO orchestration for the VPE service, and there'd be a IO orchestration for the VPE VNF. Then someone wants to do a VRF service on top of that. So a request comes into the top, so we package up a service type called a VPN, whatever, and its resource is a, what we call it, an allotted resource. It's a configuration on the VPE service itself. So the request comes into the top part of service orchestration. It gets decomposed into a configuration of a VPE. But that configuration has got to go find itself a VPE instance, VNF instance, on which to home itself and in which to configure itself. So it's going to send a request down to another service that says, "Hey, give me." You've got a service calling a service. Are you proposing that that when a service calls a service or a resource of a service calls another service, that all of a sudden the lower level service becomes an IO thingy and not a service SO thingy? I guess I'm not.
So I'll show the deployment coming up in the future slide. What I want to point out is the layering between this. And I think what we would be looking at is using the Presto interface between the different components. So at this point, I'm still trying to talk from the logical model, from the MEF model, and from the interface perspective. And I do have a slide when we get a little closer to the end that talks about four different ways that this could be deployed in terms of code. But Gil, to your question, I think that what we're looking at is the Presto interface between those different layers as a way of calling that service.
What comes in on this? So on the north side of a Presto interface, you can receive either a service request or a resource request. Is that what you're proposing?
So on the Legato, think of the Legato interface having service attributes, where the VRF might be called attachment, whatever. So let's say VLAN to IPvC map. It may be called by a neutral term like that, let's say a VLAN to IPvC map. That service orchestration would then look at that attribute and say, okay, for this particular customer, this attachment circuit is a VLAN ID or a subnet prefix maps to this quote-unquote IPvC, and therefore we have to instantiate a VRF. So across the Presto, it would be the technology-specific or technology-neutral. It depends on how we want to deal with it. We would have a VRF being sent with the specific values, and therefore the ICM then instantiated on the platform.
What's the difference in operations as opposed to models?
In so the operation,
is the difference between Legato and Presto, the data model passed, or are there some operations that Presto supports that Legato doesn't?
The operations could be similar in the sense that the operation in the Legato is on the entire sort of service view as opposed to a domain-specific subcomponent, if you will. So the set of operations might be similar, but the distinction might be on the scope of impact for those operations.
All right. So if we had a single orchestrator, then it would be, we could probably have the same transport, but we'd have to have different.
Perfect. Yeah. So
connection points within that orchestrator, depending on its role.
Exactly. So correct, and that's a very important point, which is. Although the abstract architecture identifies these different entities, the presence or absence of these entities might be dependent on, as we had previous discussions on, on scale, on performance, or whatever. So you may not have these ICMs at all in a small deployment, as an example. Or it could be all done in one blob. And this goes to also what Vimal was asking. If you take a smaller problem statement like, okay, I have 10 data centers and I have a single ONAP instance, how do I do it? Well, maybe you don't have all these different layers, and maybe it's a simpler view, right?
Yep.
So I still haven't quite understood how the recursion problem solves itself with this. So a resource from one perspective can look like a service from another, and I just like to see the example I gave of that hierarchy of layers. How does that work between SO and IO? It sounds like what you're saying, Chris, is that multiple levels of IO, in some cases the IO is acting like a service orchestrator for a lower level service. In other cases, it's acting like a resource orchestrator on behalf
but
of
I think it's case the IO is acting like an orchestrator, and it's just the role of the orchestration depends on where you deploy it within to your and what you load up into it.
What the interface is that you use to call it.
You're saying what distinguishes the service orchestration layer is that it's the topmost service of a string, and then other orchestrators would be instances down below, whether they be services or resources.
To a first order, that is correct. But I would like to add a small caveat. In a multi-operator view of the service, the partner domain that we show in the MEF LSO view will not look at the end-to-end top-level service as far as the customer is concerned. But it'll look at a component that has been bought by this global intergalactic service provider, right?
So that's this slide, Raghu, that you're just talking to with
correct.
The different.
So in this case, let's say Bank of Raghu, or I should say Intergalactic Bank of Raghu, has bought service from service provider one, and service provider one uses partner two and partner three in order to stitch the end-to-end service. So the recursiveness is sort of horizontal in the sense where the top-level service is on the far left, and then the components are on the adjacent domains. And of course, in addition, you could have recursiveness down vertically as well, right? That's what your point was, Gil.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're exactly right. That recursiveness could be on an attribute by attribute basis, depending on what it is. Why do I say that? Because I want to distinguish between the intent that has been expressed to the SO, which is I want this behavior, versus what is actually being sent down below. And a good example would be, I want VLAN preservation in my service, and that's the intent to the service orchestrator. But how the breakdown of that watt into the house, you know, is dependent on the actual network design. In some cases, we may have a design where the VLAN ID is actually part of the pseudowire that goes across the network. In another instance, you might say, pop the VLAN at ingress and push the VLAN at egress. From a customer perspective, it has been preserved, but from an operational perspective, it has a different implementation, if you will, right? So I think that is probably another way to look at the distinctions.
Okay, so to finish this out, so here's the multi-operator federation support. There are different interfaces defined by MEF. There's a sonata between the different business applications between the service providers so that you can do the ordering and payment. And then you have interlude between the SOs or the SOFs to essentially do the fulfillment, bring up the connectivity and then do all the management that you would have to through that. So you can see the layer where the cross-provider network is exposed. And then there's a 3A, which is multi-region federation within one operator, which theoretically could be the same thing, depending on how an operator does their deployments, that you may have a different instance of ONAP in each operating region, and you'd use those same interfaces to do the cross-connects.
So a question on this, but maybe more general. So in this view, where is the MEF seeing itself operating? is it on the Sonata level in order to enable the interlude level? Is this where MEF is?
Let me go back. So MEF is defining all these interfaces. MEF has a framework, and then they're defining the interfaces between all of these different pieces. So within one service provider, they've got the Legato, Presto, and Adagio. Between the customer and the service provider, they've got Cantata and Allegro. And then the service provider and a partner is Sonata and Interlude. And then you have essentially the same north-south interfaces in the partner domain.
But are they aiming to define all
these? Any known all these service interfaces? Implemented these MEF interfaces?
Correct. Good question. So you have, the way MEF has been working so far is network as a black box. So we don't say how things are implemented. It could be supersonic pigeons, which is my favorite technology. And so going to Vimal's question, what have we done so far? We have defined services, Ethernet services, and we are now defining IP services as well from the customer perspective. And it's more of an intent definition of behaviors, if you will. And we have information model for the service that is now going to reside in the service orchestration function. And therefore can be used across the Legato to the clients in the business app, or could be exposed to the customer for service control, and that section is available in MEF 55. You can read about it. And also for the service provider to request changes in behavior in the partner's service component, if you will, right?
Right.
Okay. So, lastly, we are trying to also define once the service orchestration function has the service model to be able to tell a domain controller, an SDNC or an AppC or whatever the case may be, what service component is needed within the domain as well.
I understand this SP to SP interfaces. That's the MEP's main focus area, and that's a very valuable, very important.
And also in customer case, to service provider, the Cantata and Allegro. Yeah, the white ones, correct.
Yeah, customer to service provider. But right. In most cases, that comes through BSS, because almost every request that comes could have billing implication, and most likely has to be verified that the customer is entitled to that kind of change and might not have any billing implication or whatever it is. So I get that part. But my main concern is that within that single thing like SP or a partner domain, like what you have, Legato or Presto, are there any known implementation where people have, service provider have done that exactly like MEF is saying?
Correct. Yeah. Good. The service provider that is leading the project on Presto implementation is CenturyLink, for example, and they have implemented and supported that. There are a lot of other.
It's also worth mentioning that the external API project in ONAP, we're working with MEF in defining what Legato is.
Correct.
So we're trying to really align.
Yeah.
Let me say
it
a little differently. From an ONAP point of view, in terms of relationship to MEF, seems to me it would be reasonable to say Cantata, Allegro, Interlude, and Sonata ought to be seriously considered by ONAP to use the way you've shown them in this diagram, as well as Legato. So think of Legato as the northbound interface that ONAP, if it supported it, ONAP would be presenting that to business applications.
Yes.
Seems to me those ought to be the touch points between ONAP and MEF. When you start talking about Presto and stuff below, that's now starting to bend the ONAP platform. And I ask, is that really what we want to do? I could see the external touch points between ONAP and MEF being very important so that we can interoperate with other things that might be MEF compliant as well. But within the vertical stack, I'm a little bit concerned about adopting those specific interfaces. I think that the touch points, the white boxes, the four white boxes, I'd even put Legato in white,
sure,
are really, to me, the critical integration points.
Definitely,
yeah,
that's a very valid point. And I think what I would like to tell you is this goes to what Alex called as internal interfaces, and whether we reuse whatever is available in the industry or not is up to our, you know.
Yes.
As a black box, you know, Paul's essentially correct. So, you know, Presto is really internalized inside the ONAP context. Where
and so this way, if someone did a pure implementation of MEF, it could still interwork with a pure implementation of ONAP if we support these, I'll say, five boxes counting Legato. That to me, I think would be a solid way to go.
It's an important point to remember, because this is an abstract view. An implementation view can combine entities, and ONAP is an excellent example of an implementation view that it combines the SOF and the ICM boxes together.
I would leave how people do that to their implementation choices,
correct,
as opposed to what we're trying to do in terms of the, I'll say, standard.
So two things I want to call out here. Number one is that Open Daylight already implements Presto in the northbound. But number two, you're right. I'm calling this out as Presto as we map into the framework. We don't necessarily have to use the data models that have been defined by MEF. My point with this presentation is using the framework is that we do want to have the layering, and we do want to have well-defined data models between the different layers. So whether we specifically use what's been defined by MEF or we use what we're defining ourselves, my point in this presentation is to make sure that we get the layering definitions.
I think the problem I have is that the layering we do doesn't have to be directed only by one. We have Menno has a different layering, then MEF has a different layering, then
right.
Alex presented was a different layering. And even this layering, we have divided that, like what we called IO. We have a infrastructure, the true infrastructure layer, the resource layer, which is sessions. So which layering is the right layering is something that ONAP has said and can't always be. Can't be saying that we have to comply with Menno because Menno does one way, or we comply with MEF because it does.
Right.
Then it comes. But Alex says that it does completely differently. Then it becomes a real mess. So I just don't see what value we get by saying that we have to be exactly what MEF is saying.
No, I would say even more. I think that we, as an organization, have in fact much more experience and understanding of the layers from the service orchestrator and below than the MEF does, with all due respect.
That's correct. I think that's right. That's the key point.
That we don't have to change this because we want to be, today we want to be MEF compliant, tomorrow we want to be Menno compliant, tomorrow, day after tomorrow we want to be something else compliant, and they add no value.
Well, there's a value from the external API perspective, I believe, but I tend to agree on the internalized interface. I think ONAP definitely has a lot more experience in defining that.
External API, we all agree that that's required, and we are all 100%.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely agree.
I'm surprised, actually, that the MEF has gone, below that. They have traditionally not done that.
Well, I think the architecture is trying to show the context of the different points of interoperability and at the different layerings, and that's what the context was meant to be. And remember, MEF was also looking at this initially from a carrier Ethernet service perspective.
Exactly.
And then we expanded it to include cloud-based services.
Okay. So let me just finish up. I know we're running late, and I appreciate everybody for hanging in there. Let's just finish it up so we can be done. So we talked about this. So here are the four deployment scenarios that I promised I would cover. One is a simple scenario where you don't have an IO. You would just have the Presto between the SO and the SDN controller, the app CVFM. The scenario.
I think so. I'm not sure what that means. Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead, Vimal.
Yeah, I mean, so we already said that, you know, this put a press so, and no, I think it just doesn't add any value for the internal ONAP. Why would I change so just because MEF said presto today?
Yeah. So I mean, exactly. I mean, when I look at this left, when I look at this scenario one, it looks like to me that we're saying that we have a service that has no resources, which I'm not sure what that means. I agree with them all.
No, we're looking at a service that has a fairly simple underlying model where the orchestration can be done either in the app C, the VNFM.
What does that mean? This is a model-driven system, right? I mean, so SO is working off a model, IO is working off a model. If there's no IO, that means there's no model. There's no need for it.
The only reason to have an IO is that you need to coordinate between APC. You need to create some level of abstraction to coordinate between your APC, VNFM, and SDN controller instances. If they don't need someone to orchestrate between them, if the complexity isn't there to orchestrate between them, then why orchestrate?
Because there's always complexity to orchestrate between them. There's always. So Vimal's point from earlier, you know, IO does not map at least to what ONAP is referring to as a resource in his modeling. I mean, in IO doesn't map to resource orchestration either. So resource orchestration, at least the way I see it, involves going to an SDN controller and getting network assignments, going to an APC and doing configuration in between those two. Interact with a multi-vim and actually spinning something up. That's always going to be required.
Right. So in this case, it would be done. So here's where I'm trying to talk about it in terms of code, as opposed to in terms of the layering. So in this case, the one SO would be essentially talking to APC or the VNFM or the SDN controller to set up your resources.
So working off what part of the model? Working off. So you're saying that the SO would consume the resource models from SDC's output,
as well
as the service model.
Yes, it would have both the domain resource model as well as the service that has been sort of requested. And it would know the domain resource model in order to understand what resources to ask of the SDN domain versus the APC domain, definitely.
Okay. So you're right. An orchestrator can read any part of the model it wants, right?
Correct.
You're saying that in scenario one, it reads more of the model than it would in scenario two.
Right.
In scenario two, SO only reads a portion of the model, and IO reads the rest of it, the resource level of the model.
And the rationale for going from one to two might be for performance or scale or whatever you guys think.
So the way I've been using the terms anyway between SO and RO, or service level orchestration, resource level orchestration, it's been to refer to the parts of the model they orchestrate from. But you're putting a totally different twist on it. We're just trying to communicate, right?
So you're saying that
the IO in this case, SO versus IO that distinction isn't defined based upon the model. It's based upon your deployment objectives, scalability or regionality or whatever.
So in this case, part of the challenge is I'm using SO as the project name, and since we're using the project name and the layering. So I apologize for the confusion. What I'm trying to talk about here is the ONAP project that we have today that's called SO that could talk to the SDNC or APC or VNFM.
It does that today.
Right. So this is one of the deployment scenarios. Another scenario, which is number two, is that you may need something else. The difference between two and three is one of them I'm showing two instances of SO connected hierarchically, one of them with a different role, and then in two is IO as for whatever this domain is as an independent software module.
So between two and three, you've got SO, the top level, reading one portion, the same consistent portion of the model,
yes,
and acting on it. But in two and three, you have two different
two different things with two different names that are both working on the same portion of the model?
As different deployments, yes. Depending.
So why do we have different names for those? I mean, what, so you're...
The very first one, would it make more sense to say SO and IO are in one box and they talk to Vim layer, they talk to SDN controller, they talk to FC, and they talk, and that right. would be more close to what we already have today.
Sure.
So A, the Vim is missing, that to me, that's the infrastructure. And if you say IO is part of SO, it's integrated one orchestrator model and executing the model from end to end, that would be number one. But two and three, I don't know the difference between them.
No, but I think there is a fundamental problem even before that, is that we still don't think have an agreement on the IO terminology, because
right.
we know that there is a virtual infrastructure and there is physical infrastructure, and they are treated very differently in ONAP, as they should be.
Exactly.
And, so we have been talking about resource orchestration when resources were actually virtual infrastructure. So if you want to call it IO, then let's maybe divide between virtual IO and then physical IO, and then we can understand it better. But right now, IO as a kind of a replacement for RO, I don't see what value it adds. To me, it adds more confusion, because now I'm not sure what it does.
Okay, point taken. Let's see, just to close this out. So my point in this is what I think we want to do is get to the Lego blocks model-driven approach with standardized interfaces between the different layers. And this is actually pretty similar to what Alex was saying. You know, MF LSO was one framework. I put this presentation together in the context of MF, not saying that this is the be all and end all for ONAP, but it was just one lens to look at the problem. You know, that's the final point. We could also consider other interfaces that serve the same function. My point here is that we want to have well-defined models. We could have different deployment scenarios. We want to have, I think, this three-layer model at least. Alex showed more than that. So we may want to consider that as we move forward.
So I think your second bullet, I 100% agree with your second bullet, and probably more than that. But let me just focus on the second one, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's critical that when we have architectural proposals in terms of, you know, what component's going to do what, that we need to explain also how does the model drive. Mm-hmm. Like in those deployment scenarios, I got totally confused because I wasn't sure how would you have the model drive those different deployment scenarios. I think that's what's missing it for me. It's not obvious that was a model-driven, what you present really is a model-driven proposal with those deployment options. But anyway, I just misunderstood that anyway, let me put it that way.
Anyway, okay, point taken. Any final questions, comments before we break? Okay, thank you, everybody. I appreciate it. I'll post this later today when it's available.
Okay. Thank you. Alex's too, Chris, would you post Alex's as well? Or is there already posted it?
I've already posted the slides for this. I'll post, Alex is supposed to post his own. I'll post the recording as soon as it processes.
Okay, all right, thank you, Chris.
Okay, sure.